Everybody, this is Jess. Today's episode is about burnout. And since Nikki and I have both experienced it, Nikki has been open about her experience. And this episode is a little bit more intimate for me because I share my experience. I hope it helps. Thanks.
Hey, everybody, it's Jess
and Nick,
and this is Table Talk. Today, we're going to talk about burnout because it's so prevalent in today's working culture. So I did some research to start us off.
Yes, we share.
And it takes 3 to 5 years to recover from burnout. And burnout is like you pretty much lose the ability to care for yourself. You were saying earlier something about executive functioning.
Yeah. So, you know, when we look at in mental health, how well someone's either doing or not doing, we look at all of their environmental spheres, right? All the areas of life that have to be in balance for us to function. So personal care, relationships, right? All of these different aspects. And when we see those, when we see a person's ability to care for those things start falling off, that's a huge indicator that a person is burning out. And then what you just mentioned, what were you just saying?
Losing the ability to care for yourself?
Yes. Yeah. So if you can't care for yourself, you're going to have a bad life.
Yeah.
There's no other way.
Yeah.
You just say all the time, if you're not comfortable, you'll have a bad time.
Yeah.
Right? So like, how do I look in these jeans? Are they comfortable? No. Well, then you'll have a bad time. Right? But if you can't take care of yourself, you're going to have a bad life.
Yeah.
It's the most valuable variable, the thing we spend our time doing, and how much of that is dedicated to actually taking care of ourselves, because mm-hmm. we're not robots.
Yeah.
We're doing the work of more than one person constantly, and we think it's normal.
Mm-hmm.
I thought it was normal.
I've been there in corporate. So, like, my experience with burnout is, like, I pushed myself until I had nothing left to give, and then I still kept pushing. And that was in the automotive industry. And Nikki, you just told your story of burnout.
Mm-hmm. So while for some, this may have been looking quite impulsive, I have had made the decision over years, I realize, of contemplating to leave the field that I've worked 23 years to exist in mental health and in healthcare. And I've done all the things, right? So I just, mm-hmm. I gave a kind of like a behind the curtain experience, view into the experience that I'd been having, even though on the outside, just like you, I appear to be a high performer, right? Very dedicated. Mm-hmm. What those things often equate to is self-sacrificer.
Mm-hmm.
But just like, you know, the dog on the chain that every day, you know, one chain link is removed, you don't realize how far you're in until you're in it. And it's something like healthcare, we are praised for, you don't do this for the money. It's almost like you are seen as a martyr for sacrificing yourself, your time, whatever it is, to give more to the industry because it's the right thing to do. The problem is that culture is incredibly, incredibly toxic because it discounts the value of the gift us healer folks bring to that field. And you can't, it's a death sentence to put folks so gifted like that in situations where they can't take care of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's dangerous.
Yeah.
You know, and the other piece is we dedicate a lot of time and energy to you know, trying to fix how clients are cared for, maybe, right? And all that energy going in that direction, we lose sight of those are the same people who are providing the care.
Yeah.
Like, there aren't two separate sets of folks here. I'm receiving just as much mental health care as I'm giving out, and I've needed maybe more.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen that in the automotive industry, and I think that, you know, me sharing my story, the reception that I got and the amount of Me Too from my industry mm-hmm. is startling. I think it's just the tip of the iceberg. The two largest industries here in Metro Detroit are what? Healthcare and the automotive industry. And I really feel like this is going to be an age of whistleblowers that come from the working class. And I think Jess, I think you are the automotive industry whistleblower. And as a reminder, right, like I really thought a lot about this. A whistleblower is a person who gets the correct information to the right people. We've lived a system that we know is broken because we were taken out by it.
We were broken.
Yes. Yes. We ended up committing career suicide. Mm-hmm. And now I won't be using my degree. Absolutely not. There is no position in this world that would require me to use this degree that I would want to participate in. And the thing is, people are like, you know, don't let it lapse. You might change your mind. And this is so much bigger than that. This isn't an issue of like, I'm not having a great time in mental health right now. I just need, you know, to take care of myself better. If anybody was going to take care of themselves better, it would have been me. Like, I would have been able to do it. And the fact that I can't, it's just, I think even the messages that I get from others is, the reasons that they're staying mm-hmm. in this really, really toxic situation where we're not allowed, it's not built in to care for ourselves. Mm-hmm. So I'm glad I was able to put it out there and that it was so well received. I really think, though, I'm leading the way for the story that you're going to share that has lived in you for years now. Mm-hmm. And I just feel like it's such in alignment with like where we're at right now.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Yeah. I do too. Yeah, so during the pandemic, I was remote, and then I switched to a new department within General Motors. There was hardly any structure for work to be done.
What kind of work you were doing? Because you weren't on the line.
No, I was not on the line. So I was doing business process analysis.
Which is basically like...
So the infrastructure, the technology was old and busted, and the team that I was on was newly created to get, like, the base processes for what was happening in the system, what pieces were being touched in that system so that a new system could be developed.
Yeah. And what's really incredible, you know, just that you it was identified early that you are brilliant. Right. They saw in you that you had the ability to go far mm-hmm. and it did lead you far. You did everything right.
Yeah. I worked in the emissions lab. I went from a technician I went from a key desk person working contract to an emissions technician working contract, then got hired in to General Motors. I got my business degree and then I started working in software and applications and within... like 6 years, I had 6 years of becoming a technician, had global responsibility.
Yeah. And so by any definition, I mean, you were climbing the ladder. Mm-hmm. What happened?
I went to that new department. I was working from home, so a lot of my support system was my family. And my family has... limited interest in the things that are interesting to me. I don't know how to say this.
It's okay. You can fumble through it.
I felt like an outsider in my family. So being put back into that environment of just being around my family for support and not being around career-driven folks like I was in the emissions lab really helped me see how bright I was, and that my intelligence was an asset rather than an annoyance.
Mm-hmm. 'Cause you were asking the right questions.
Yeah. And so I got moved to this department, customer care and after sales. And I think they make up 30% of GM's profits. Like, being all virtual, it was hard to connect with people. We were in the office a few times for a team meeting, but that doesn't make up for how much time, like, I need with a boss to feel safe enough to be, like, my best and brightest. Mm-hmm. And I'm definitely a person who tests the system. So I'll ask a question, and depending on how it's received and how somebody answers it, I know whether it's safe enough to actually do what I want to do or ask what I want to ask or not.
Like, is the team ready for this?
Yeah.
Because you really are an out-of-the-box innovator. You know, this is how change happens. 5% of the population are the game changers. And mm-hmm. they just so also most often happen to be on the autism spectrum. Yeah. You didn't even know that at the time.
No, I didn't.
It's incredible what you did and how you were able to do it. By any means, like, this is a success story, right? And you made money. Like, you were making money. You had a house. Like, mm-hmm. you were, by all, you know, like, on the outside, this looked like you had everything. You were in a relationship. Like, what more? Like,
yeah. Yeah, I was successful. But by whose standards?
And at what cost?
Yeah. And so I felt very isolated and alone. The questions that I asked leadership to better understand the system that I was working with were kind of dismissed and rejected because they were too big picture or whatever. But I didn't understand that by asking those questions, or I guess I didn't understand that I ask questions that are so high level that it helps me understand the deeper intricacies of the system.
Well, and the impact, right? Like, drawn out over time, this decision affects this if that's our goal.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's fascinating and critical.
Mm-hmm. And so it gives me a depth of understanding of the system so I know what questions to ask the right people. Any questions that I did ask leadership were dismissed. And then we had projects coming in without, like, priority. And there was no template or design or structure for the team to follow. So I had pitched like a project priority for the department. And I had asked, like, well, what happens when you don't meet timing for projects? Like, what does your senior leadership do? And they were like, oh, well, they don't do anything. Like, it just is. So that to me says that department was functioning on good people pushing themselves, right? If there was no structure,
they were absorbing
set,
the problem. Yeah.
Not if there's no structure set. Yeah. The people are absorbing the problem.
Which causes another problem.
Yes. But I had talked to, you know, several people in the team, and I'm an empath, right? So I naturally pick up on small voice cues of people or whatever. And there was another person on our team who I was running a project with him. And he also had ADHD, right? We were kindred spirits. And he was having some of the same issues that I was, where, you know, we were just asking for direction and leadership. Our boss wouldn't give it to us, not in the way that we needed. And there was a point where we were behind on our project, and I had tried to get my boss's attention. Mm-hmm. And I had scheduled, like, weekly project check-ins so that, like, we could...
This was initiated by you?
Yeah.
Not leadership?
Nope. Mm-hmm. So we could assess the status and, like, she could give us direction how to move forward.
So you're trying to fill a gap.
Yeah. There was a point where we were on a Zoom call together, and, you know, she yelled at us. And I, because of my past, because my dad was a verbally abusive alcoholic, I have done anything possible to never get yelled at by anybody in authority, whether that be, like, a teacher or supervisor.
It's belittling.
That was a trigger that I didn't know that I had. Mm. And I remember I emailed my boss after, and I said, you know, like, I'm sorry that this project went sideways, but, like, this is, I would like to go over lessons learned with you and set up a plan for improvement and continue together, because she just wanted to take the project on herself. Mm. I never heard back from her.
Mm.
And we went on July shutdown. I didn't realize that I was in such a heightened state. I was in fight or flight for, like, weeks.
Well, and just how you've described to me in the past what your day-to-day and week looked like with phone calls and IBM. I mean, just insanity.
Yeah.
And it was, the expectation was, there's no question. Like, this is your priority.
And I felt so lost and so confused. And...
I remember I was just trying to keep everything together. And I was nowhere near vulnerable enough with even friends that I had to tell them that I was struggling this much. And I remember towards the end of July of 2021, I was trying to get something ready for a meeting. I had my project partner. She was asking me if I needed any help, but I had asked her before for help and asked her questions, and she told me it was for me to figure out, so I wasn't going to ask her for help anymore.
Because it wasn't helpful.
Yeah, it wasn't helpful, and it just made me feel like shit. She was pinging me. My emails were going off. And then, like, my phone was going off, too. And I've never felt so overwhelmed in my entire life, and I wanted it all to stop. And I used to self-harm when I was younger, and I remember that feeling coming back of, like, the way to get out of that chaos and to get back into my body was to hurt myself, right? Physical pain will bring you back. And I wanted to hurt myself. And I remember in that moment just thinking, like, that's not right. Like, I shouldn't have to live life this way.
Especially as a successful career person who's climbing this ladder and doing all of the things right.
Well, and I got that far because I had so many defense mechanisms built up, right? That, like,
oh, an insurmountable tolerance to stress, which is dangerous because it doesn't take much, right? Like, at the end, when you're at capacity, we're not meant to go that far. Right. We're not meant to tolerate. And I see, I think it's by the grace of God and the fact that I think you are gifted with being on the spectrum that allowed you to even be able to be here to tell the story. Thank you. Keep going.
I remember knowing that that wasn't right, and that life shouldn't be that way. And I had gotten on Prozac earlier in the month, but it takes a while to get into your system. But I remember my doctor telling me, like, if you feel like you want to hurt yourself, go to the hospital. And so I did. I drove myself to the hospital, went to the emergency room, and I remember I didn't cry until they asked me why I was there. And then when I was in the room in the ER, you know, they kept asking me, like, oh, do I have a plan? Like, do I want to commit suicide? And I kept telling them no. Like, and I don't, right? Or I didn't. I didn't have a plan. I didn't want to die. But I just needed it to stop.
You had passive suicidality, which is dangerous. And a symptom of what you were going through, 100%. There's nobody in that situation that wouldn't have come to that same point. I mean, most peace out way early, or you know, I think the fact that you made it to the end really is important. That's the message to share, because there are more yous out there.
And I remember this doctor came in and he took a step closer to me, and I remember I flinched because I was in a state of shock, and all these doctors and residents kept coming in and asking me the same questions. And I remember thinking, like, Jesus, doesn't anybody talk to each other in this place? It wasn't until way after that I realized that's the line in healthcare, right? Like, they can't keep you in a 72-hour psych hold if you don't have a plan, if you're not actually suicidal. Like, that's their line. That's their boundary for them to keep you or release you.
And burnout is so socially acceptable.
Yeah.
Are we not treating, right? What's going on here?
I was there at least 4 hours, just in a room by myself, calming down. And they gave me some resources for an outpatient program. And then they discharged me.
No appointment, no follow-up, just good luck. People in that state, if it takes more than 3 steps to get help, they won't. Mm. You're the outlier, though, because you went. What was that like? Because you weren't coming from a place, probably like many of the others that were there in an IOP.
There's a lot of younger folks in there, like it was the adult program, but a lot of like 18, 19, early 20s. But I remember the way we talked about stuff. I remember just being like, why doesn't everybody talk like this? Like, mm-hmm. This makes so much more sense. Mm-hmm. I think I spent, it's like 8 days is what insurance covered. But towards the end, there was this other gentleman who came in who was UAW and worked the line. Mm-hmm. And seeing him on his first day of like still being in a state of shock, and trying to calm his anxiety down and like thinking he can manage and control it on his own. It was such a like a reflective moment for me.
Yeah.
To be able to see that. So after the program, I went back. It had been probably like 3 weeks since, you know, I took myself to the hospital.
How did that work? With work? Like, did they require you to take, like, FMLA, or I don't know really how it works.
I was on short-term disability.
Okay.
That all went fine. I mean, I had some paperwork to fill out and send in. And
well, it happens so often for folks, probably.
Like, yeah. Yeah. But I went back to work, and I remember thinking, like, everything is the same, but I'm so different now.
Well, now you're the unstable employee.
Yeah.
Right? Or seen such because you went to take care of you.
And so I worked for a few more months, probably like a half a year. And then in January of 2022, everything was the same. And all the projects that I was working on were causing people to have imbalances in work and life.
And you were problem solving. Like, Jess was giving out, you know, the MMPI to the teams that they were working on to try to see how on just their level they could make this group more cohesive to get the outcome that they were looking for.
Mm-hmm.
Like, and it's like you were trying to plug like a Cadillac size hole with, you know, like a rubber duck. Like it was not, you were doing the right thing and the problem was just so big.
Yeah.
So this isn't even for you lack of trying.
No. And because I wasn't given the information or my questions weren't answered in the way that I needed them answered, which now I understand is my autistic brain, I was not a good employee in that department, right? Like, I wasn't effective in my job. So I leaned into, like, taking care of people, which is what I tend to do, because I know that I do that well, because I'm an empath.
When you're around struggling people.
Yeah.
Like, what empaths do around struggling people?
Yeah.
They run into the fire.
Yeah, during a pandemic, right?
Yes, yes.
I just spent a lot of time talking with folks about, like, how they were doing. But, yeah, I was working on projects where, like, it didn't make sense. Like, there were jobs being created, but it was, like, so somebody could check an inbox and email every 15 minutes because GM reneged on a promise they made to their employees. So now their employees were taking the brunt of it, which isn't fair. And yes, you know, by economic standards, job creation is great. But, like, what are those jobs really being created for? And, like, are they fulfilling to people?
Well, and how much is workarounds for the bigger problems?
Yeah.
You know, I'm really seeing now that I think, in my opinion, if the employees are, if it's gotten to the point where they're experiencing emotional issues, mental health issues, it is broken and you have to keep going layer and layer up and up and up to figure out where the problem is. Just like on the line, right? Like the mm-hmm. whole thing stops. So when things aren't successful, it's just like when a plant doesn't grow, right? We don't we don't say like, oh, we need just more durable seeds that can, you know, withstand the fact that we're not going to take care of them.
Yeah.
Like, that's essentially what we're doing
right now. Yeah, we don't say, like, oh, that plant's just bad then because it's not doing well in this environment. Like, you have to put the plant in a fertile environment, right?
Where and is it tropical?
Yeah.
Is it native? like, you know, one of my favorite books since sixth grade is The Giver. I've probably read it 100 times. Jess and I watched the movie so that they were, like, caught up so we could have this conversation. But what I find, I always go back to it. So for anybody who's ever read it, you know, it's a story about this utopian society where essentially everybody is the same, you know, and they take out all of the variations. And very young, they start figuring out like what a person's purpose will be based on how they live their lives and all of these things, which is so fascinating. The interesting part, though, is that in order for all of that to work, they had to take out emotions. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like, what does it look like when we do that? And what are the consequences of that? It always leads me back just to that idea, though, that so many of us are born with really beautiful qualities, innate qualities. When I posted my my whistleblower post, I had so many folks commenting, and people I've known for years who were like, I work in this industry, but I just have a love for, you know, invasive species and like amazing things that I had no idea. That's phenomenal. These are not folks who were necessarily like standouts at school, mm-hmm. but man, like they had a skill. Us adults, right? Like I see the skill and the gift that I have, and I can see it in other people. I can see it in children and teens. Mm-hmm. What would happen if those things were nurtured? I think the way we're doing this is not working, and I don't necessarily have the solution, but I know that we both agreed we can't be in the system.
Yeah.
If we're going to try to do something different, it's like we had to become important in those industries so that our empty chair mm-hmm. says something, and maybe it makes room for other folks.
Yeah. And I tried to voice that concern too within the system. So when I left in January of 2022, I sent an email to Mary Barra, which is the CEO of General Motors. High importance, immediate safety concern.
Well, you're not supposed to do that, right? You and above your superiors, like, it's a risky move. And you're already beat down, so just...
I had nothing left at that point.
That's a good point, right? Like, yeah. Whatever's going to happen is going to be no worse than this.
Yep. You know, I talked in that email about how, you know, my boss was online at like 9 p.m. or sending emails at midnight or whatever, and how that fosters that culture of burnout, right, if that's expected, and how that example was unwittingly set in every department that I had been in, of like working yourself past capacity. Yes. And I had told her like my experience and how I drove myself to the hospital and, you know, what my career had been up until that point. I had street cred at General Motors, right? Like, yes. I did cool things. I worked on like change initiatives.
You made a name for yourself.
Yeah, I did.
You really did.
I said that I just couldn't stay. Like, it wasn't worth the cost of my soul. Mm-hmm. And I left before bonuses were given out.
It's kind of a power move right there. I think both of us will say that this is so much more than about us. That's like such a sacrifice. But mm-hmm. you were staying true to what it was you were saying. I will take no more and give no more mm-hmm. to this system that is breaking me.
Yeah,
money wasn't even going to be, right? Because you already had it. You'd already made the money. That yeah. was not the
and I,
end.
I still wasn't happy.
No.
Or fulfilled.
Absolutely not. And even if you had, right, like you didn't even have the time to create any kind of fulfillment, really.
Right. And I had a friend who I worked with who told me that she worked for a boss that, and it's within General Motors, and to work for that boss felt like she was being raped. And you can say what you want about having, you know, better boundaries and stuff. But if you grow up in an environment where you have adverse childhood experiences, it sets you up for this life, right? Mm-hmm. Of deferring to authority until you realize that, like, you have more power than that. Mm-hmm. But the work that's required to do that and rewire your neural pathways is excruciating.
Yeah. Yes. And I know for us as helpers who have anxiety because we're high sensitive, you know, having to override our own systems for so long, mm-hmm. And have that just be, it feels normal after a while.
Yeah.
I had no idea how much pressure I was under to exist in this field just by, like, leaving. Like, leaving is what helped me see it. Mm-hmm. And this is just in the handful of days after. What happened after you sent the letter? Or continue the conversation about the friend that came over.
So she told me that, which is actually part of the reason why I sent the letters, because they mistreated her too. And I, you know, people can do whatever to me, and that's fine, I can take it. But, like, people don't deserve that, right? Like,
well, and it creates a system where you couldn't do it for yourself. You had to do it because you didn't want anybody else to have to experience that.
Yeah.
So hearing that story made it so real. I know that's part of, a huge part of why I had to do it. Mm-hmm. I am part of so many therapist support groups. Here are the names of some. The Burnt Out Therapist. Therapist Supporting Therapists. You know, among others, there are so many. There's like 8. I posted my letter in all of them before I, you know, left those groups. And the amount of therapists who had said, this is my story. Mm-hmm. How do we get out? I don't know the answer. What's really inspiring, though, is that Jess has already lived this. We know what happens. We know what could happen. And you're an outlier, right? Like, mm-hmm. most folks won't have the experience that you did. Mm-hmm. But because of your neurodiversity and just who you are, you're able to now tell the story. Yeah. And it's not just our story. It's many people's story. And I don't think it's just the automotive industry or healthcare.
It's right? everywhere.
Where else does this exist? Mm-hmm. If we keep participating and signing up for positions in our community that long term, right? If we could have a mathematical equation, I bet we could calculate, you know, For me, right, as a therapist, here, you're going to pay X amount of dollars for this degree. The field is going to pay you this. And then, you know, if you are a typical person, it's going to take you about this long to burn out. And if you're extraordinary, maybe this long.
Yeah.
And then whatever years you have left is what you have. And because most of us are contractual, mm-hmm. right, I don't have a retirement fund. I don't have a 401k. I have nothing. How does that happen? How does what happened to you happen, right?
Yeah.
Technology is at a place where, right, there are so many things that just in our lifetimes we've seen grown and change, but this hasn't. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a surprise that now, you know, through time, we've seen different levels of really brilliant minds, savants, folks that are able to think outside of what is to explore what could be. And you have a logic stream that follows a path that I think people are really going to understand. I'm excited to see who's the first to step up. What industry is going to be the first one to step up and say, we're going to do it different? Because I think that says a lot.
Yeah.
Right? It's very clear the systems that are set up to stay doing what they do. And it's very hard for folks to leave. So the folks who can, it's even more important than we do. You know, the fact that we do leave, mm-hmm. So that we can advocate for them. You know, I'm advocating for the single mom who's, you know, working nights at a hospital and then getting up and taking her kids to school, coming home crashing for a few hours before she has to pick them up, get them to a babysitter, and then do it all again. Mm-hmm. Like, when do you get to raise your kids? I was missing out. These were your prime years, mm-hmm. right? You lost relationships. Like, you had a lot of pain as a result of choosing yourself.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're a badass, Jess.
Thank you.
I wonder if you would be open to recording a quick separate audio of just you reading your letter so that if folks are on the podcast and they want to know what that's about, but they don't have access to it on where we post it on social media, because mm-hmm. Jess is going to share their story. And I've wondered and asked them if they were comfortable sharing the letter to Mary Barra. Are you?
Yeah.
I think think it's something people need to see.
Yeah. And I also want to hear from everybody else, too. If this is your story, I'd like to hear from you.
Did you ever hear back?
I did get a call from an HR person.
You were already done, though.
Yeah, I was already done.
There was no repairing because you were damaged. We literally, I cannot function as a therapist. I cannot. It's not because I'm, you know, like I said, I'm just tired and don't want to do it. No, I push myself to the point where my body will not let me.
Yeah.
And I know that had been the case for you. And we're trying to gather our lives enough together to have some semblance of healing and enjoying the life that we've created and worked so hard for. I just, I want to lead by example that way. And I really love that we get to do that together. You make me so brave.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you. I know that there were days after I went back that I would wake up so anxious that I would just start throwing up. And I would force myself to go to work anyways. I mean, I was remote. So I was just logging in. But even that act was...
I mean, it was wired for to be the priority, right? I know we've talked about this, but my second child, Violet, I had a really intense pregnancy with her. I know a lot of it is what was happening in my professional life and my inability to care for myself the way I had with my son 5 years earlier, when I was much earlier in the career. And when I was hospitalized, because we didn't know if she was going to make it, my very first thought, my very first call was to my supervisor. And the response I got was, well, you're going to call your patients, right? Who's going to, you know, I guess get a list to the front desk. Other people will have to take it on. It was annoying for me to be in the hospital. They were forwarding emails and calls from my clients to me so that I could follow up in the hospital, in the health system I worked for. I'm so glad to be on this side of it. And you're right. I really think it's important. This is where sharing our story, this is for everybody. This is where sharing your story is how we make change, right? The folks who record history and the folks who are living it are sometimes two very different groups of people. And so as we tell our story, we are creating a history that won't go away, that our children will be able to see. It sets a new standard. They won't have to experience this. I won't let our kids, right, like venture down the paths that I know are dangerous, right? I always use the analogy of, you know, if we're down the river pulling out all these people who are struggling and, you know, whatever, you know, we always say like someone's got to go upstream to see why they're falling in. And I don't think anybody's falling in.
We're inviting them in, saying like, this is what you're supposed to do. Come here.
This is fine. Water's great. Hey, there's a $2,000 higher non-incentive. Like,
yeah.
Bells and whistles. And we're like, sweet. Like, you can even have an inner tube. And it's like, well, they're not. Yeah. No one's falling in. And I think it starts as early as high school.
Yeah. So if this is your story, please let us know. We'd like to hear from you.
Thank you guys for listening. And Jess, thank you for sharing that. For those that listened through this story, thank you. There are more like us. And I can prove it.
Hey, everybody. Thank you for listening to this. It's very near and dear to my heart. Like I said, I hope it helps some of you. Also, Nikki and I will be posting our stories separate, so look for that bonus content. All right. Thanks. See you later.